Hey, you want that to go?
Time to take some takeouts on the news, and we'll start with Todd Zwillig, our political correspondent in Washington. Todd, a weekend snowstorm meant that the federal government's closed down today. Schools are closed, but it also means that over the weekend, people were stuck at home, maybe with their TVs on, and they didn't miss Sarah Palin speaking at the Tea Party convention.
We need a commander-in-chief, not a professor of law standing at the lectern.
Todd, is Sarah Palin, she must be talking about the wars overseas.
Yeah, a big applause line. You hear the crowd erupt when she said that. A little bit of a coded message for the crowd at the Tea Party convention there. What she's talking about is the decision of the Obama administration to try some terror suspects in civilian courts, Article 3 courts, instead of treating them as prisoners of war or enemy combatants. This is a huge issue on the right, whether it's the Republican right or the independent Tea Party right that Sarah Palin is courting there. She knows this is a big issue for them.
Well, the White House, John Brennan actually came out over the weekend. He's the Deputy National Security Advisor, and he said, look, how come these things didn't bother you during the Bush administration? Here's what he had to say.
On Christmas night, I called a number of senior members of Congress. I explained to them that he was in FBI custody. None of those individuals raised any concerns with me at that point.
He's talking at Abdulmutallab, the suspect arrested on Christmas for an attempted bombing of a plane over Detroit. But again, John Brennan is basically saying that you guys are turning terrorism and national security into a political landmine.
Well, yeah, and not during the Bush administration, of course. This is the Christmas attack that took place just this past Christmas. But he is saying exactly what you just said, Celeste, and it's very, very interesting because John Brennan is saying, hey, Republicans, you guys were briefed. You knew that he was read Miranda rights and being treated as a civilian prisoner at that time. You didn't say anything. Does this sound familiar at all? Because back in the spring, when the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, was criticizing Republicans for waterboarding and not telling anyone about it. They said, wait a second, Madam Speaker, you were briefed back in 2003. You didn't say anything. And then she said, well, I was briefed, but the CIA lied to me. This is the same exact scenario with the roles reversed. It's very interesting how Washington works in this way.
Okay, Todd Zwillig, takeaway Washington correspondent. Thanks so much.
So one of the most momentous showdowns in Wall Street history, and you may not know anything about it, but Louise Story, our finance reporter for our partner, the New York Times, is writing about it. You actually call a showdown between AIG and Goldman Sachs over a lot of taxpayers' money, it turns out, as one of the biggest sort of behind-the-scenes dramas in the whole financial meltdown. Explain.
That's right. So you know AIG was bailed out.
That's right.
You know they were bailed out because they were running out of cash, and so they needed a taxpayer bailout. But you might not fully understand why they needed that money.
Well, they owed money to somebody, right?
To Goldman Sachs and other banks.
There we go.
But in addition to owing the money, they had already paid them billions of dollars. By the fall of 08, they already had paid out $30 billion to banks in these collateral calls. It's a technical word when you shift money over on assets that you've insured. And Goldman, for an entire year, had been at the forefront of demanding this money from AIG and also marking mortgage bonds kind of the lowest in the market. Now, that said, it was within Goldman's right to demand money if it really deserved the money. And the issue here is, was Goldman too aggressive or not? Were they right or not? Did they have motivations to push very hard for this money at a time that, you know, really the walls were just coming down on AIG?
Indeed. When did this showdown actually take place? Just remind us.
Yes, it started July 2007. That's when Goldman first put in this demand. And it really got bigger and bigger. And, these are two companies that had been really close since the 90s. And they had once considered merging. And this tore apart this cozy relationship between AIG, Goldman Sachs. You had the chief executives at both companies at a very high level hashing this out. And in the end, Goldman was paid. Goldman has survived very strong. And AIG fell and needed all this taxpayer money.
And AIG stock is nearly worthless. And Goldman got paid 100 cents to the dollar in almost all cases.
They got paid out all of it, and they got paid out all of it by the taxpayer in the end.
Indeed. Louise Story, finance reporter for our partner, the New York Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
For our last takeout, we turn the mic over to you. On Friday, as libertarians and political independents met at the National Tea Party Convention in Nashville, we asked you what your new political party would look like if you could make one, and your answers ranged from very detailed platforms, actually, all the way down to sarcastic.
My friends and I, we've created a political party. We call it the Unawares Party. And like a scenario that you might find would be You know, they'd ask us a question, and you'd lift your head up off the desk and say, huh, what was the question?
It was Charlie from Michigan. A lot of cynics from Michigan. Listen to Dan from West Bloomfield.
My new political party is the halftime of part-time party, since it appears that so many legislators have so much time to campaign. Legislation should be a part-time job, so I proposed on the platform to slash their salaries, and since they're part-time, they don't need vacation pay or free health care.
Okay, this is a very popular topic in Detroit. This is Walter from the Motor City.
I would have the American Non-Denominational Political Party. Currently, there's too much political paralysis in Washington and too much inactivity due to all this Republican versus Democratic thing. So my party would be for people who want to get together, work, and do something that's right for the country.
The non-party party, and he wasn't the only one, calling for sweeping goals to transcend political disputes and get something done.
The party that I would have would be the Transparency and Accountability Party, which would really push government leaders and politicians to be more transparent and accountable to its people, which is really what democracy is all about, and this is not occurring throughout the nation.
Other people dreamed of some crossover between the two parties that actually exist. Chris Orbach from Manhattan wrote to us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. My party would be called the Libertarian Socialist Party. Fiscally conservative but socially liberal, defend both the rights of corporations and individuals. This would be something of a return to what pre-culture war republicanism used to be before the Bible-thumping anti-gay right-to-lifers hijacked it in a paranoid response to the late 60s counterculture.
Thank you, Chris, and for everyone who called in to 877-8-MY-TAKE or posted their comments, as Chris did, on our website, thetakeaway.org. And you can see all the political parties our listeners want to create at thetakeaway.org.
Coming up, tough economic times mean states are slashing their budgets, have some of them cut too deep.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.